Tiferes B'nai Torah presents The Shmooze, an engaging and motivating Mussar and Hashkafa series that deals with real-life issues.
The CDs this evening are sponsored by Yvette and Stu Beck of Tiferes B'nai Torah, Queens, in honor of the engagement of their son, Judah, to Maya Peled. The refreshments tonight are sponsored by Mr. and Mrs. Michael Most, in honor of Mr. and Mrs. Yaakov Edelman, the birth of their twin babies, and the bris this past Sunday. Mazel tov. The Torah describes a situation of a shogeg killer, a man who kills unintentionally. And the Torah describes the events. A man goes into the woods and he's chopping wood, and the axe head flies off and hits another man. Under certain circumstances, that person who is chopping the wood is considered a rotzeach, he's considered a murderer, and he must go into gullus. He goes into exile as a kapara because the Torah considers him, even though he's not an intentional murder, it's not bemazed, it's not premeditated, but had he been more careful, had he been more guarded in his actions, this event wouldn't have happened. Therefore, he's held responsible, he's held accountable, and he must go into exile. He goes to the Ari Miklat and remains in the Ari Miklat until the death of the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol was considered the tzaddik of the generation. On some level, had the Kohen Gadol been on a higher madrega, had the Kohen Gadol been a daven better, this event may not have happened. Therefore, there's some connection between this murder and the Kohen Gadol's death. Hence, this killer remains in Ari Miklat until the death of the Kohen Gadol. Then the Mishnah in Makkos, interesting enough, says that the imoseim shokonim gedolim, the mothers of the Kohen Gadol, would go to the Ari Miklat, would go to the city of exile, and they'd feed and clothe these murderers. And the Mishnah explains, why is it that the mothers would go to feed these murderers? Because they were afraid that the rotzeach would daven, he'd pray for the death of the Kohen Gadol, and therefore the mothers of the Kohen Gadol would go to the cities to feed them, to give them clothes, I guess to win favor in the eyes of the rotzeach, so that the rotzeach, the killer, should not pray for the death of the Kohen Gadol. But even more specifically, the Gemara makes a diuk. Tama delo matzlu, the reason why the Kohen Gadol didn't die was because they didn't daven, the rotzeach did not pray for the demise of the Kohen Gadol. Hamatzlu maisi, had the rotzeach, had the murderer davened, the Kohen Gadol might very well have died. And that's the Mishnah, that's the Gemara, that clearly indicates that the rotzeach might well have spelled the death of the Kohen Gadol based on his tefillah. And that is a rather problematic concept, because the Chovos HaVavos tells us that one of the basic concepts that a ma'amin must come to understand is that I can neither help you nor harm you. If I am to trust in Hashem, then one of the basic concepts to understand is that if I am to thrive, if I am to be successful, then there's nothing that you can do to change that. And so too, if I was slated not to enjoy success, there's nothing that you can do to change that. Because nothing is in the hands of humans. It's in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can neither help me, nor can you harm me, because I am under the direct guidance, the direct control of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And says the Chovos HaVavos, that's one of the basics of bitachon. If that's true, the question is, how can the tefillah of the rotzeach affect the Kohen Gadol? Apparently, again, the Mishnah is saying that had the killer davened, the Kohen Gadol would have died, yet that seems to fly in the face of exactly this basic principle. But what makes it even more problematic is the fact that we're dealing with something so holy as tefillah. How could the tefillah of a rotzeach? The rotzeach means he's a man who's a murderer, whether intentionally or unintentionally. Certainly the Torah considers him a person that's not doing what he should have been doing. He's a person who deserves to be in exile, and his tefillah is davening for the death of the tzaddik of the generation. So of all the things to affect somebody else, how can tefillah do that? So I'd like to see this evening if we could deal with this concept and see if we can understand how it is that the tefillah of a rotzeach can possibly change the destiny, change the lifespan of a Kohen Gadol. And to do that, I think we have to take a little bit of a step away. I'll share with you an interesting observation. Probably one of the most powerful experiences of a yeshiva bachur is Yom Kippur in yeshiva. And if you can imagine spending the entire day tefillah, entire day contemplating, thinking, I remember as a bacha one year, after a very long Yom Kippur, there was a certain thought that hit me. You blow the shofar, you start davening Maariv, and right there in Shmoneh Esrei are the very words, Slach lanu avinu ki chatanu. And I remember one year it really bothered me. I spent the whole day with al chait, I spent the whole day clapping. Now, what possible chait could I have done between the kiya shofar and the 2 minutes span of Maariv? And I asked the Olam Gadol that question. I said, what do we need Slach lanu in the Motzei Yom Kippur Maariv? And he said to me an interesting answer. He said, you ask that question because you don't understand the amazing capacity of a human. And because you fail to understand the capacity of a human, you can't understand how it could be that there's a chait between the end of Yom Kippur and the beginning of Maariv. And I realized that this person was saying something very deep. And I want to share with you a certain way of understanding it. If you could imagine for a minute what it was like to be Adam HaRishon. Now, one of the key distinctions between Adam HaRishon and us is that we were born in a stage of an infant. As an infant, you're born with very little das, very little signs of human intelligence. And as you begin growing, as your cognitive abilities begin forming, the world begins to take shape in your mind. But the problem is it grows very, very slowly. And as your horizons expand, it's a slow, slow step. So much of the wonder of the world is gone. But Adam HaRishon opened his eyes as a fully mature, cognizant, brilliant man. And if you can imagine what it's like to be a intelligent, understanding, fully formed adult, opening your eyes and seeing the wonder of this world. You can imagine Adam HaRishon opening his eyes and seeing the clouds, seeing a tree, seeing the birds, seeing forests, and being astounded by the wonder, by the beauty, by the complexity of this world. But even more, Adam HaRishon understood that he was occupying a body. And if you can envision for a minute the following, imagine you're Adam HaRishon, and imagine that you open your eyes, and you're now in the world. And you realize that there's something over here that moves. Oh my goodness. Wow. It comes closer to me. Oh my goodness. And it moves. Oh. Look at that. It's astounding. I can move it up and down, up and back. I can, two of them. And look at this. I can make them move in and out. And what's that? What, feel, oh. Feel. I don't know what feeling is, but I feel. I feel. Now, gentlemen, I want you to hear what I'm saying. The Mars rover was sent up with something astounding. The instrumentation on the Mars rover was something that man had never, ever contemplated. They sent up a robotic on this rover that was the most sophisticated thing ever contemplated by man. On the front of the Mars rover was a robotic arm. And the robotic arm costing billions of dollars and all of NASA's and all of mankind's research that went into it basically was this robotic arm that was able to move comparable in some ways to a human arm. It's able to move up, able to move in, able to move out, sort of has a shoulder-like motion and an elbow. And they sent it up, and on November 27th, the arm failed. And it took them 3 weeks to get the arm from its position back here. If you would like to understand the greatness of man, reach into your pocket and you can easily distinguish between a quarter and a dime and a penny just with feeling. The human hand is so complex, so flexible, its feelings are so sophisticated that you could feel rough, you could feel hot, you could feel smooth. That's something that man could never dream of. Because if you study the robotics of the Mars rovers, it's primitive and it collapses after a few weeks on the job, but they can never imagine or envision the complexity of human motion. And if you realize what human motion is, and you realize how smooth and dexterous the hands are, and you understand that there are 48 muscles that are weaved into the forearm to allow for such fluid motion, you understand the wonder of the arm. But you and I, have grown up with it, always had a hand. It's been there ever since I can remember. But Adam Rishon didn't have that. Adam Rishon opened his eyes and felt fingers move them and was astounded by the complexity of this creation. And he actually realized he wanted to get closer to something, and he took a step, and wow, that's astounding. This bends, and there's a hip, and that bends, and it's perfect, it's graceful, there's an interaction between the muscles and the limbs, the ligaments that hold it. But Adam Rishon was brilliant. He understood the brilliance of the Bria. And if you'd like to understand how complex the human body is, the Medrash tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu u'beis dino, Hashem and his Beis Din sat on each limb. Before creating each limb of Adam, Hashem sat with the Beis Din and planned it out, because that is the complexity of each limb. And Adam Rishon, in his brilliance, which exceeded the Malachim's understanding, saw and recognized not just the beauty of the world, not just the complexity of this Bria, he looked at his body and understood the wisdom that was implanted in it. But he also understood much more. He also understood that everything that he saw, his body, the rivers, the oceans, the trees, the birds, the animals in the woods, were all created for him. His wisdom was so complete that he understood the purpose of creation, and he understood that all of it was for him. But he understood one more step also. And that's something that the Medrash tells us. That Hashem said to Adam, look how beautiful my world is. Study it. See the beauty. Pay careful attention. That you do not destroy my world. You see, what Adam Rishon also understood is not just that the entire world was created for him, but the entire world was also dependent upon him. If in fact he used the world appropriately, if he used the world as it should be used, the world would grow, the world would become shalem, would become complete. But if he didn't, then the world itself would be destroyed. And here is this brilliant man waking up with this wave of intelligence, this wave of understanding, this cognition of the significance of the world, the significance of his place in the world, and how the world is literally dependent upon him. And amazingly, he blew it. Given one mitzvah, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas, and he eats from it. And when Adam Rishon ate from the Eitz Hadas, it wasn't just that he was makalkel the world. In his understanding, the world was to be destroyed, and he was correct. According to the way that Hashem originally set the world up, that chait was so catastrophic that it was to spell the death of the world. Hashem with rachamim, with great mercy, instead just brought death to the world, brought tremendous pain, brought Adam to work hard, and the world itself, berachamim, was changed. The world we see it is vastly different than the world before the chait. Before the chait, Adam Rishon was in Gan Eden, the Malachim served him, but it wasn't just that his job was different, his whole essence was different. Adam Rishon, before the chait, had one task on this planet, and that was to grow. But the growth was easy. The Alta Slobodka says that his growth was literally like breathing the air. When he decided, I will change, if he woke up and said, you know, there's a bit too much anger in me, he decided to change, and the change was accomplished. If he decided, you know, I'm a bit too arrogant, that decision made him more humble. He recognized clearly his creator. He saw with absolute understanding his purpose in the Bria, and he was able to change. He was on a growth pattern straight up, and every moment of his existence was to grow level after level. That is something that we can't relate to. But after the chait, everything was changed. After the chait, it wasn't just that death was introduced to the world, but the Bria itself was changed and Adam was changed. Now, when a human being tries to grow, it's a very, very difficult task. If a person decides he's no longer going to be angry, it's years and years of hard, difficult work to change that. A person decides he's going to work on a midah, he's going to work on something, it takes him an awful lot of effort. Man was radically changed. But here's the observation. One man, one sin, one time, and the world itself is slated to be destroyed. And you may wonder, isn't that amazingly harsh? It was only one sin, one time, by one man. But the answer to that is that that was the way Hashem created the world. You see, when Hashem created the world, He said to Adam, "This is your world. I'm literally giving you the keys to creation. The world is dependent upon you. The world is in your hand. If you use it appropriately, it will grow. If you don't, it will be destroyed." That is the capacity of man, and that's the amazing opportunity that Hashem gave to man, that your actions are so significant, your actions are so mighty, that they literally can change the destiny of the planet. And it's not that Hashem was acting harshly with Adam Rishon, but rather that was his position, that was the place that he had, that was the opportunity that he had, and with that was the amazing chance to accomplish worlds. And this has some real applications to us. You see, the Ramban makes a very important point. Did anyone ever notice what Adam Rishon's first name was? Search the Medrash, search Chumash. Look, in all the Rishonim, you'll never find Adam Rishon's first name, because his name was Adam. Adam means man. And the Ramban says it wasn't by accident that he wasn't given a name. He was called Adam because it was a lesson to us. That lesson is, he is Adam and we are Adam. That just like he, so too we are men. And the exact same impact, the same power, the same position in the universe that Adam HaRishon has, every man after him has. And Hashem would have created the entire Bria for any man. And every human being has that capacity, has that importance, has that impact in the world, whether we recognize that or don't. And this concept, I think, is fundamental for understanding many, many issues in the Torah. And I'll share with you one that I think is rather clear. If you study much of the Torah, there seem to be an awful lot of punishments in the Torah. As a matter of fact, there are 365 lo sasehs in the Torah, do nots. And the Rambam counts, 207 of them carry malchus. And what that means in plain, simple language is, if you violate one of the 207 negative prohibitions in the Torah, you're taken out to a public place, the entire town watches when they whip you. But the whipping is not just the whipping. There's a doctor on hand to make sure that you could actually survive it. They assess your health. They stand there, and the Mishnah in Makkos describes the whip, and it's a very, very painful, amazingly embarrassing situation. But that's for violating one lo sasehi in the Torah. And it seems that it's not that hard to violate a lo sasehi in the Torah. As a matter of fact, it's kind of easy, I'm afraid to say. Lashon hara, you blow a lot right there. All right, it's a lav sheles b'maisa, you won't get malchus for it. But you want to hear an interesting one? Try eating lettuce that's not checked. You can potentially violate five lo sasehis with one leaf of lettuce. And if you watch, you'll see it's not that difficult to violate a lo sasehi. But lo sasehis are not the most powerful punishments in the Torah. Above them, there are lo sasehis that have karis. Karis means you die at 50 or 60, a part of your neshama is cut off. Above that, there are averes that are more serious, misa b'dei shamayim. Above that, there's misas beis din. There are four types of misas beis din. And you realize that it's not that hard to violate them. I was davening once, and a fellow, the Shlich Tzibur, took maybe 22 seconds too long to start Shemon Esrei. So the Macha in the back goes, no, come on. And the Shlich Tzibur turned around and was embarrassed. And you realize that Malbim Pnei Chaveru Barabim, embarrassing someone publicly, is Ki'ilu Rochso, as if you killed him, and the Gemara says it's literal. You realize it doesn't take that much to violate very serious averes in the Torah that the Torah holds you accountable for. And you may wonder, what's pshat? Why is the Torah so vindictive? Why is the Torah so harsh, so cruel? Lashes and death penalties. It sounds like it's such a cruel, harsh, severe Torah. But gentlemen, that's the point. Every word in the Torah was berachamim gadol. It's not that the Torah is severe or harsh. It's that that's the capacity of a human. The human being's actions, thoughts, and words are so impactful that that's the punishment, because that's what you're doing. A human being as a center of the universe, his actions are so significant, so weighty, so mighty, that if he blows it, that's the punishment that's needed to maybe in some level meet the impact of the action that he did. It's not that the Torah is severe, it's that the human's actions are so impactful, so powerful. And when you think about it, and you realize that every Adam is an Adam Rishon, and when you realize that Adam Rishon blew it once, and literally the whole world should have died, and that's because the human is given such a center position in the universe, the next question you come to is that, why is anyone left alive? If it's so easy to blow it, and you could blow it on such a regular basis, why is it that people are not dropping left and right like flies? As a matter of fact, if you think about it, by the time the fellow becomes a bar mitzvah, he should have about 10 minutes. About 10 minutes to blow it in some way, open his mouth to his mother, to his father, and that's it, hits the deck. They probably should have these combo ceremonies, you know, the bar mitzvah and funeral ceremony, you know, let the caterer do one price for the two. But if you think about it, if that's the impact of a human's actions, if that's the severity of a human's actions, and the Torah holds them accountable for it, people shouldn't make it. But the reality is that people do make it. They live long lives, healthy lives, and they live out their days on this planet. And the question is why, and the question is how, and the answer is because Hashem recognized, Kaviyachol, that if he judged the world bedin, if he created and ran the world with judgment and achanami, there would be very few people who made it. And therefore, with that understanding, Kaviyachol, Hashem created the world in a different way. Every action, every reaction that Hashem has with the world is with the midas harachamim. When Hashem interacts with us, when Hashem interacts with the world, the midas harachamim, the midah of mercy, of compassion, is the one that Hashem uses. And because of that, a person can do things time after time, day after day, week after week. It's not that they don't have the effect. It's not that it doesn't make the roshim, but Hashem waits. Hashem overlooks. Hashem gives a person a chance to change, to grow. And that's rachamim. But the Koch Veor makes a very important point about rachamim, about understanding mercy. He says that sometimes mercy can end up being very, very cruel. And he gives an example. He says, if you imagine two men walking down the street, one man is very, very kindly, very compassionate, and his friend next to him is cruel and callous. And they're both walking down the street, and they both witness the same scene. They see a mugger, for no reason, beat an old man senseless. He didn't have to do it. He could have taken the wallet and run, but he decided just to keep beating him. The man who's callous couldn't care less. So what? Old man, who cares? The man who's kindly and compassionate is filled with anger, with a sense of vengeance. How could you do that? He's an old man, he's innocent. How could you do it? He wants to take revenge and he wants to kill the mugger. Says the Koch Veor, that is the midas harachamim. If you notice, there are many times when the Torah says, be careful. Be careful with the almana, be careful with the yosom, be careful with oppressed people. Ki chanun ani. Hashem says, I'm merciful, v'shamati, I'll hear their cry, because I'm merciful. What do you mean I'm merciful? Because I'm merciful, I'll seek their vengeance. Because Kaviyachol, when a widow, when an orphan is oppressed and it cries out to Hashem, Hashem in His mercy feels the widow's pain, feels the orphan's pain, and wants to take revenge against people who harm them, who oppress them. Because it's the midah of rachamim, the mercy for that oppressed person, that causes Hashem to act in a vengeful manner, to act with the midas of achzorius, of cruelty. And the Koch Veor says, therefore, many times, the midah rachamim itself can turn out to be the midas achzorius. And gentlemen, I believe that's pshat in the Kohen Gadol. You see, the Kohen Gadol, no matter what a tzaddik he was, there was something that he did in his lifetime. There was some avera, there was some lack, there was something that he didn't do right. It may have been long ago, it may have been slight, but there was something on his plate. And this rotzeach, this killer right now, is begging rachamim. He's in exile, he's oppressed, and he's saying, Hashem, have mercy, please. I want to go back home, it's been so long, please. And when he davens for rachamim, when he asks Hashem to have rachmanis, Hashem feels badly. And Hashem acts kaviyochu with the midah of rachamim, but that midah of rachamim kaviyochu makes Hashem act to the Kohen Gadol with a very different midah. Now Hashem is acting with the midas adin to the Kohen Gadol. Now Hashem is looking with a very, very fine eye to analyze who is this Kohen Gadol, how clean is he, and no human being could survive such scrutiny. And in fact, the tefillah of the Rotzeach might well spell the death of the Kohen Gadol, because it changes Hashem's way of viewing the Kohen Gadol, changes the way Hashem acts to that Kohen Gadol, from the midas harachamim to the midas of achzorius, and the Kohen Gadol might well have died because of that tefillah. And I think this is a very, very important concept to understand, that the way that tefillah works is kaviyachol, it changes Hashem's midos. You see, Hashem acts with us with character traits because that's the only way we human beings can interact with our Creator. Our Creator is so great, so beyond any human capacity to understand and relate to, that the only way that a human can relate to Hashem is if Hashem acts with midos to us. And typically, the midah that Hashem acts with is the midah of rachamim. However, there are times when there are other midos that come into play, whether it's the midas adin, the midas of achzorius, and that time, things change radically. And I think there are a number of concepts to understand here. One is a very simple one. Every once in a while, you hear about a person who dies young. How could it be? In the prime of his life, passes away. How could it be? Now, you and I will probably never know why any individual dies. And there may be many reasons. Could well be that was all the years he had in his life. It's all he needed to accomplish, and that was his lifespan. Could well be he spent a number of years heading in the right direction, and Hashem understood that he was headed down. Mutav shiyamo zakai, better he should die innocent rather than heading south, and Hashem with mercy took him. And it could well be that he did enough wrong that Hashem says it's enough, it's a shear. And you say, what? What could a young person have done so wrong? What grand, great avera is it possible that a human being could have done that he warrants death? But gentlemen, that taina is fundamentally not understanding one concept. And that concept is the greatness of a human. Arguably the greatest sin that a human being can ever commit is not violating any of the 365 losases. Arguably the greatest sin that a human being could ever commit is not accomplishing what he was put on the planet for. A human being was put on the planet to grow, to accomplish, to create acts that will live on for eternity. And if a human being who warranted creating the entire earth, all of the cosmos for him, spends his life with frivolous activities, spends his life with nonsense, that is arguably the greatest sin of any sin. And if you ever see a human being die, no intelligent person with Das Torah would ask, how is it possible that he could have done a sin that warrants death? We've all done many, many, many sins many times over, because arguably the greatest sin of all is not accomplishing, not growing, not using this life that we were given for its purpose. And that concept is important to understand. But I think there's a much deeper concept that requires understanding. And that is the concept of tefillah. And the question is, how does tefillah work? Imagine for a minute you hear about a young woman contracts cancer, and they're operating. You hear her name and you say, oy vey nebuch, six kids, oy, what a tragedy. And you join the minyan, and they're saying tehillim, and people are crying, and they're begging, and they're beseeching. And at that point you have to ask yourself, what are we doing? Either this woman merits life, in which case she'll live, or she doesn't, in which case she won't. Hashem knows the cheshbon. Hashem understands exactly the family's needs, the six children, the husband. Hashem understands exactly where this woman's holding, where she's coming from, where she's going to. And either this woman warrants living or she warrants death. What possible difference do our tefillahs work? Bishlam, if she davened, maybe you'll tell me she does tshuva, she changes, she's a different person, but she's unconscious. What difference does our tefillah do right now? But the answer is that our tefillahs work in a very different way. When we daven, we ask Hashem to act with the midah of rachamim. We ask Hashem not to look with such a discerning eye. We ask Hashem to overlook. We ask Hashem to act with rachamim, with rachmanis. And even though it's true that maybe she doesn't warrant life, maybe it's true she's slated to die, we ask Hashem, look differently. Use more rachamim, more mercy. And the way the tefillah works is it changes Hashem's midah from a certain level of achzorius or din to a much greater level of rachamim, and can spell the difference between life and death. Because again, any human being judged with strict din would drop like a fly, but Hashem acts with rachamim, and a tefillah can change Hashem from the midas adin to the midas rachamim, and that tefillah can work for somebody else, and that tefillah can work for me. You see, the next time that you're in trouble, and it's whether you don't know how you're going to pay a bill, or you don't know which yeshiva you're going to send your child to, or you're sick, or it's your wife, or whatever tzaras that you have, and you're in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, and you say to yourself, what right do I have to daven? Who says I'm zocher to have children? Who says I'm zocher to have a good parnasa? Who says, maybe it's true, I'm not warranting it? Now that may be true, but it's at that point that you're ready to start davening for real. Because it's at that point that you can say to Hashem, it may be true. I don't claim to be a great person. I don't claim to warrant anything. Everything you've given me up to now has been a matnas chinam, has been a free present. All I'm asking for is mercy. Hashem, I'm not saying I'm deserving of it. I'm begging for mercy. Please help me. And that tefillah is a real tefillah. That tefillah can change Hashem from a level of din to a level of rachamim and can change your destiny. And that's a very real and effective tefillah. Would you like to know what a tefillah is? 2-year-olds are very, very cute. My Yoel is 2, and he has gorgeous golden hair, beautiful blue eyes, and I think he's as cute as anything can be. And with that as a background, I came into the kitchen one morning to find little Yoel on the floor with a gallon of olive oil that he overturned that spilled all over the kitchen floor. Now, gentlemen, if you've ever tried to clean up paint, you'll understand that paint is easy compared to cleaning up olive oil. You soak it and you soak it, towel after towel. You can't get the stuff off the counters, off the floor, and he's sitting there in it, playing and playing. I'm cleaning, and by all rights, I should have wanted to, who knows what to the kid, but I couldn't feel anger. You know why? Because he was so cute. And he's sitting there playing in the oil, and all I could do is, all right, no, never, he's a kid. That, my friends, is the koach of tefillah. You see, a tefillah that finds favor in Hashem's eyes, kaviyochel makes Hashem look at you with a sense of favor, with a sense of he's cute. I love him. And it's okay. He's done a lot of wrong things. He did a lot worse than spill a gallon of oil on the floor. But I love him, and I accept him for who he is, and it's okay. And that is a tefillah that can change your life. Because that tefillah changes the way Hashem deals with you, not because you warrant it, not because you're a tzaddik, not because you should get it, but because Hashem is rachamim, and you daven for mercy, you pray for mercy, and with that tefillah, Hashem may well act differently to you. My friends, there are some very big deal concepts here. A rotzeach, a killer, is someone who the Torah says warrants exile. He can't be amongst the Jewish people. He's done something so egregious that he must leave home. He is not a tzaddik. He's considered a person who's outside the machaneh. The Kohen Gadol is a tzaddik of the generation, yet the power of tefillah is such that the rotzeach davening can spell the demise, can kill the Kohen Gadol, one of the greatest men of his generation. That's the power of tefillah. And the reason that it works is because when Hashem created man, Hashem gave the human such capacity, such ability to change the world. With that comes responsibility. And there's not a human being alive who walks the clean white path and doesn't deserve certain punishments. Because that's the greatness of a human. He's given such capacity that it's almost impossible that some human being hasn't failed. And even the Kohen Gadol, as great as he is, did something wrong. But Hashem acts with rachamim. Hashem acts with mercy. Day after day overlooks. Day after day ignores. And people that we know do sins. People that we know violate the Torah. And Hashem waits. Hashem waits. Hashem waits. That's rachamim. But every once in a while, something changes. Every once in a while, the midah changes from rachamim to din, and then oy and oy vey, because with midah sadin, it's a very frightening concept. And historically, we've seen it. When you read about very, very difficult times for the Jewish people, you see midah sadin. And it's a very frightening time. But Hashem acts with rachamim. The tefillah of that rutzeach can change Kaviyachal Hashem's midah, because the exiled killer says, Hashem, I'm lonely. Hashem, I'm away from my family. Please have mercy on me. And he davens tefillah after tefillah until Hashem says, okay, I have to take care of you. And Kaviyachal Hashem changes his midah when he looks at the Kohen Gadol, looks with great scrutiny, and it might well spell the demise of the Kohen Gadol. That's the power of a tefillah. And that is the impact. And again, it's an amazing concept in terms of the capacity of a human, amazing concept in terms of what a tefillah can do, because ultimately we are dependent on the midas harachamim, ultimately we're dependent on Hashem acting in a given way to us, and that's what one tefillah can do. I want to close with an observation that the Sha'arim b'tefillah says. He says there'll be many times when you daven, not once, 10 times, 20 times, but they're real tefillahs. And it's clear that Hashem is not answering. You ask, and you're not answered. And a person may get the sense, my tefillahs are in vain. Says the Sha'arim b'tefillah, that's not what's going on. He says, oftentimes it'll happen that some event occurs. A family member is in crisis, and you don't know about it. It's a late night, they're driving, and they need great mercy. Had you known about it, had you been aware of it, you'd daven, you'd ask for rachmanis, but you're not and you can't. Says the Sha'arim b'tefillah, at that point Hashem takes one of those tefillahs that you davened maybe 2 years ago, takes it out of the node, takes it out of the jar that it's stored in, pulls it out and uses it at that time. Because every tefillah that a person davens for is stored up, has its place, has its purpose. It may not be effective then, but it's stored up, and Hashem will use it later. Hashem will use it at a distant time, and ultimately can change the course of a person's life. My friends, these are very, very deep concepts. They're very deep concepts because typically we don't think about it that way. In Western thought, you know, whatever, as long as you're not killing, you're not murdering, you're not doing anything too severe, you're all right. But Western thought misses the key fundamental concept that Hashem created the human being to be great. Hashem created the human being to accomplish, to change the world. And changing the world does not mean building skyscrapers, does not mean making lots of money. Changing the world ultimately means changing me, ultimately growing, learning, accomplishing what I was put on the planet for. When a person does that, they fulfill the purpose of creation. Adam Rishon understood why he was there. Adam Rishon understood why Hashem created him. And Adam Rishon understood the awesome capacity of a human. But he also blew it, and he changed the world. We inherited a very different world. And in that world, we're covered with darkness. In that world, it's very difficult to see things. In that world, it's certainly very, very difficult to change. But Hashem reaches out. Hashem waits for our tefillahs, and when a person davens earnestly, sincerely, he can change the way Hashem deals with him. And again, not that I change necessarily, not that I become greater, not that I now merit it, but now Hashem acts with rachamim, Hashem views me as a cute 2-year-old. Hashem views me with chen, and that can change the way my entire din. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu judge us favorably. May we be zochet to understand these concepts, and be zochet to learn how to daven and how to use the system appropriately.
You've been listening to The Shmooze, presented by Teferis B'nai Torah. For more information on The Shmooze, please visit us at www.theshmooze.com, where you can download all The Shmoozin' free of charge, as well as view source sheets and address questions or comments on this or any other Shmooze. The Shmooze is completely funded by private donations. We need your help to continue our work. All donations are tax-deductible and count as miser. Please help us help others by calling 866-613-TORAH. That's 866-613-TORAH. Or you can make your donation right on the web at www.theshmooze.com.